The briefing is brought to you in association with the Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai is a place for city leaders, developers, architects and designers to come together and innovate for the future of urban spaces. It's an opportunity for the Global South to convene in the Global South. It's a testbed for real-world solutions that will shape the future of people and planet. You can hear from the innovative thinkers and inspirational voices that drove the narrative at this year's edition by listening to Monocle's special episodes of The Briefing, recorded live at Expo City Dubai in March. Find and listen to the shows now at monocle.com or wherever you get your podcasts. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum 2024. Collaborate, innovate, transform.
You're listening to The Briefing, first broadcast on the 24th of November 2022 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Briefing, coming to you live from Studio One here at Midori House in London. I'm Emma Nelson, and coming up, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky accuses Russia of crimes against humanity at the United Nations.
Де знаходилось пологове відділення? Російські терористи забрали життя немовля. Дитині було два дні, коли її вбила російська ракета.
We'll speak to the former UN ambassador Sir Mark Lyle Grant about the audience that the Ukrainian leader hopes to reach. We'll also mark the return of the blob to British politics, get the headlines from Latin America, and then it'll be time for our World Cup countdown. That's all coming up right here on The Briefing with me, Emma Nelson. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has described the UN Security Council as a dead end when it comes to helping his country repel Russia's invasion. We have to restore justice inside the UN structure, he told an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. Well, Sir Mark Lyle Grant served as the UK's ambassador to the United Nations between 2009 and 2015. I'm delighted to say he joins me now. Welcome to The Briefing, Mark.
Good afternoon, Emma.
So let's just look at what Volodymyr Zelensky said yesterday. He said, this is a dead end when the instigator of the war, the party responsible for the terror, is blocking any attempt on behalf of the Security Council to execute its mandate. He has a point, doesn't he?
He does have a point. One of the compromises that was made when the United Nations was set up in, you know, after the Second World War, was that certain big powers would have a veto power in the UN Security Council. And that was to ensure that they actually joined the organization in the first place. And unfortunately, what that means is that when there is a crisis that directly involves one of the permanent members, they can prevent effective action. And we've seen that many times in the past, sometimes even, you know, with the United States blocking action against illegal settlements in the West Bank that Israel sets up. But I saw it firsthand when I was at the UN Security Council in 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea. And we had something like 27, 28 emergency UN Security Council meetings criticizing Russia for that illegal annexation. But we were unable to adopt any resolution because Russia vetoed them.
You're suggesting then that we have been down this path before. What could the UN have done at the time to make sure that when this situation came along and Russia invaded Ukraine, that this would be avoided?
Well, I don't think anything could be done, to be honest. It was a necessary compromise. If you took away the veto powers from the five permanent members, the first country to leave would be the United States, you know, quickly followed by both Russia and China. So, you know, that would then, the UN system as a whole would disintegrate. So it is a frustration, of course, when these sorts of conflicts come about and can't be resolved. But I don't think taking away the veto power, even if that were possible, would be a solution in the longer term. And I don't want to suggest that just because it's not possible for the UN Security Council to sort of adopt any measures against Russia, that there is no value in the sort of meeting that was held in the Security Council last night. Of course, President Zelensky is frustrated, but the fact is, it is possible to give him a public platform, a world platform before all 193 countries to make his case, to bring out the war crimes that Russia is committing, the aggression that they're committing. So it is valuable in that respect. And it's also valuable in putting pressure on some of the so-called middle ground in the UN Security Council. Because let's not forget that India, Brazil, the UAE, Kenya, they're all members of the Security Council this year. And they are then forced to take sides publicly on an issue like Ukraine. So it has a lot of value, even though it's not possible for the Security Council to reach a firm agreement.
He mentioned Chapter 7 of the UN Charter. What is that, and what purpose would that serve?
Well, the Chapter 7 is the part of the UN Charter which allows the Security Council to take coercive measures, to impose sanctions or to authorise peacekeeping missions or to authorise military action. So, for instance, we adopted a Chapter 7 resolution on Libya, which authorised the international community to take military action against Colonel Gaddafi in Libya. There are sanctions regimes against, there were against Syria, there has been against North Korea, for instance. And those are all done under Chapter 7. And it's those sorts of resolutions that Russia has been vetoing in the UN Security Council.
Having had what happened in 2014 with the annexation of Crimea, now we have the full invasion of Ukraine by Russia. What lessons can and should the United Nations learn from this? I mean, you've mentioned the fact that taking too drastic a measure would not help in the long term. But surely he had a point when he says that, you know, that there is always going to be a dead end. And the expectations, therefore, of the efficacy of the UN and the UN Security Council will be dimmed.
Well, I think that's true. And certainly the UN Security Council needs reform. But the sort of reform that is likely to happen, which is expanding it and potentially giving more countries a veto power, countries like India and Brazil, will in fact make it more difficult to reach effective decisions in the Security Council, not easier. So commentators might say it's the Security Council is expanded, it's more representative of the world powers of today, but actually it will make it less effective in taking action to resolve conflicts. But that does not mean, as I say, that it's not useful to have these meetings. And don't forget that even though the Security Council can't take action, the UN General Assembly can vote, and every country has a single vote there. And this issue has gone, the Ukraine conflict, to the General Assembly on a number of occasions, and Russia has been very, very heavily outvoted, you know, with 141, 145 countries voting against Russia, which demonstrates very publicly how isolated Russia is in its aggression.
It's isolated, but like Volodymyr Zelensky yesterday, it has a voice. And we had the Russian ambassador to the UN accusing Western nations of supplying a reckless flow of weapons and arms to Ukraine, saying that they're conducting strikes against infrastructure in response to the unbridled flow of weapons to Ukraine. It gives Russia that oxygen of publicity, doesn't it?
Well, it gives them an opportunity, obviously, to state their case. But the reality is that no one seriously believes what they're saying. And the very fact that they only had sort of four allies voting together with them in the General Assembly, countries like North Korea, Syria, Belarus, Eritrea, shows that they actually have very few international friends. And meetings like the UN Security Council yesterday demonstrate how isolated Russia really is in the international community.
Mark, thank you so much for joining us. That was Sir Mark Lyle Grant. Now here's Monocle 24's Carlotta Ribello with the day's other news headlines. Carlotta.
Thanks, Emma. China has recorded its highest number of daily COVID cases since the start of the pandemic. There have been outbreaks in a number of major cities, including the capital Beijing, despite Chinese officials still attempting to eliminate the virus. Brazil's electoral court has rejected a challenge made by the party of Jair Bolsonaro. The outgoing president narrowly lost to the former leader Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Bolsonaro's party claimed, without evidence, that voting machines were compromised. And the Wales national football side has started to display rainbow flags at their World Cup training base in Qatar. The Welsh players are reportedly furious that they have been threatened with sanctions if they wear One Love armbands during the tournament. Those are today's headlines. Back to you, Emma.
Let's now mark the return to politics of the blob, a name coined by the British Conservative politician Michael Gove, the blob had until recently been put back in its box by successive Liberal right-wing governments. So why has it made a return? Well, James Snell is a writer and senior advisor for special initiatives at the New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy. He's also written recently in Politico, advising us of the return of the blob. James, a very warm welcome to Monocle 24.
It's good to be with you.
So for those of us who have not been following its progress with such great detail as you have, perhaps, could you tell us what the blob is?
Yes, well, the blob is something which gets its name from horror films. And the phrase was coined by Michael Gove, who's a perennial cabinet minister in Britain. And what he essentially described was a sensibility which pervades a group of people. And these are the people who run the media, government departments and the civil service in Britain. And many of them don't consider themselves part of the blob, but that's only what makes them more blob-like, in his view.
And when you mean a sort of a sensibility, is it a mindset? Just explain to us, if you are part of the blob, what you, how you think and how you make your decisions politically.
Absolutely. Well, the blob is at least part a development of what we might call the old Sir Humphrey impulse among the policy elite, which is the idea that the civil service, its institutional culture really matters. And that intruders into that particular institutional culture simply don't understand how the government should be run, what the country should look like. But it's also at least partly cultural. We now have a university-educated population of roughly 50% of young people, at least. And repeated surveys of voters have demonstrated that the big differences between political parties in polarization, there are things like rural and urban, especially age, but also education. And people who are educated in the newly expanded higher education sector essentially do think alike, remarkably so. And those people, by and large, run government departments and staff the bureaucracy in this country.
And they also represent a part of political society which the Conservative Party in the last few years, at least, has done its best to give a good kicking to.
Absolutely. And voters, to an extent, as well. Many of the most recent elections and essentially all the referendums that have been put before the British people this century have been rejected by voters as essentially things which have nothing to do with them. The voters in Britain's north rejected a regional assembly. Scottish voters rejected independence. We rejected the AV voting system, which is something that real people have no truck with at all, but was beloved by think tanks and some civil servants and political reformers. And, of course, very famously in 2016, we rejected the European Union, which for many people was an alien external force, which wasn't the stuff of real life. And conservative victories in every general election since 2010 seem to bear this out as well.
So we have here in the United Kingdom the idea that the blob has been sort of pushed to the side for a little bit. So you've decided to resurrect it and say that it's back. What's prompted you to do that?
Well, exactly. It's the profound and total defeat of what seemed very briefly to be a reforming, an attempted reforming government under Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng. They created in their heads a somewhat blob-like substitute, this idea of the anti-growth coalition, which it turns out seems to include the majority of voters and participants in Britain's economy. All of whom have either a vested interest or a sort of cultural inclination to despise things like commerce, economic growth. These things are not necessarily beloved by the university educated in our population, many of whom indeed believe in things like degrowth and the idea that we can't have so-called infinite growth on a finite planet. Now, those people very successfully beat the reforming administration. And now that Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt have taken over instead, they are profoundly blob-friendly characters. Rishi Sunak, who first rose to prominence as Boris Johnson's chancellor, is a creature of the Treasury.
Now, you described about the fact that with Rishi Sunak coming back, the adults are now back in charge. And you also said that orthodoxy has returned to both Britain and Europe, and it's like returning home after an unpleasant holiday. That suggests that the blob isn't a dreadful thing, that actually the blob is being grown up.
Well, exactly. That there is this cult among perhaps in opinion formers as well as civil servants. And the idea essentially is that only we know how to be sensible. Nobody else does. It's our job to rein everybody else in. Once this essay of mine was published, I spoke to a civil service friend of mine who's been in the civil service roughly since Brexit, so for 6 or so years. And he essentially said straight up that both ministers and the public don't understand what we do, and they couldn't do it if they tried. And I rather sarcastically summed up his perspective as, we know best. And he responded with, deal with it.
Is the blob going to get us in the end?
Absolutely, yes. I think there are so many things, institutional problems in Britain, which, in a sense, consensus has decided to ignore pretty consistently. The Bank of England and the Treasury more or less failed to see the immense difficulties that we were storing up for ourselves with 2 decades of low wage growth, real wage growth, and very, very cheap money in the form of low interest rates. And this has now come to potentially destroy us for, if not a generation, at least a few years with the recession we're now seeing in our bid, possibly failed to clamp down on inflation. In much the same way, no one seems prepared to break the combination of lawyers, civil servants, and NIMBYs in the public who refuse us to allow us to build the many things we need, for example, property, lab space, and power grids, all of which we don't appear to have and won't have for many years.
Finally, James, is the blob a particularly British problem, or is it spreading elsewhere?
Well, absolutely not. And of course, much like local customs, each country has its own blob. Germany, of course, suffered for 15 or so years under what we now believe, certainly in the foreign policy sphere, was a stifling Merkelist orthodoxy. France, its governing classes come from 2 universities, by and large, Sciences Po in Paris and the School of National Administration, which was actually closed last year after educating the entire elite since the war because it became so unpopular, politically unpopular. And Italy, one of the ironic things, we think of Italian politics as very colourful, chaotic. It's the extent to which, because their governments fall and reform so frequently, they can be influenced by the blob. We have had many entirely technocratic administrations in Italy over the last 20 years. And even people who come to power at the head of populist parties end up becoming blob-like by the end of their time in office.
Journalist and blob watcher James Snell, thank you so much for joining us on Monocle 24. Well, 16 here in London. Let's have a closer look at what's happening in Latin America now with Monocle's correspondent in the region, Lucinda Elliott. Hello, Lucinda.
Good morning, Emma.
Good morning. Good afternoon where we are now. We're 12:15. The biggest development bank in the Americas. That's the big news where you are, isn't it? Tell us more.
Yeah, so for the first time, Brazil's candidate was selected to run the Inter-American Development Bank, Ilan Goldfan, who currently looks after the Western Hemisphere Department at the IMF in Washington, was nominated. And this presidency is awarded every 5 years in the Americas. And it's highly political because of the important financing the bank actually brings to the region. The IDB arranged funding, I think, of more than $23 billion to Latin America and the Caribbean last year. And its president is chosen by these 48 shareholder countries. And the Latin Americans were all fighting it out this time, including the first female nomination for Argentina, who I spoke to last week. But it seems that the Brazilian, who was very much backed by the US and, of course, President Bolsonaro, will take over.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, the long-term effects of this issue.
Well, as I say, the IDB arranges funding for and designates funding to the different countries in the region. And as it's a very political organization, depending on which side you fall, you're guaranteed to get more funds or less funds. It's quite interesting. The reason why there was this nomination was so important for the region is actually after the departure of a Cuban American who was expelled after allegedly having an affair with a female assistant. He was a Trump nominee and he was removed by the IDB governors. And this was after an investigation found that he probably violated ethics rules. He's now signed off, and this has meant that an interim president was appointed, who was also a first woman, and now the formal vote was held, and we have Ilan Goldfan at the head of the bank. He is an extremely experienced professional. He's an economist, used to run the Central Bank of Brazil. So there is kind of momentum behind him, and it seems that his bid, as I say, was very much backed by the US this time.
Let's move to Argentina. One of the region's most well-known human rights activists has died. Tell us about her.
Yeah, so 3 days of official mourning were announced on Sunday after Hebe Bonafini died at the age of 93, as well as leading the human rights organization, the Madres de la Plaza de Mayo, the Mothers of the Plaza de Mayo. after her two sons and her daughter-in-law went missing during the dictatorship in Argentina. She was also a pretty controversial figure in later life in Argentina. She fiercely opposed US governments, who she blamed for backing these right-wing dictatorships in the region. She was also linked to a corruption scandal over affordable housing for the poor that involved the foundation. But she'll be remembered actually later today, largely for her work to demand answers to the thousands of disappearances in Argentina, staging the first of what would become these weekly vigils every Thursday in this great square in downtown Buenos Aires in front of the presidential palace. And it's they say that she will actually be laid to rest at her request in the plaza.
Let's move finally to football. Lots of focus on Saudi Arabia, not Argentina, this week because of Saudi Arabia's amazing defeat of Argentina. But it has been a sort of a historic week for Argentina, not just for the wrong reasons.
Yes, so more news for football followers is that the Hand of God ball was actually sold this week. Listeners may remember that the shirt won by Diego Maradona in the legendary 1986 World Cup quarterfinals between Argentina and England was auctioned off for, I think, £1 million or so earlier this year. Well, this week, the Tunisian referee who kept the ball has sold it at auction for £2.3 million. We don't actually know who bought it, and the referee hadn't actually set out any terms that it should be available, for example, for public view. But the shirt is actually on display in Qatar for anyone who wants to see it. But it just shows that the power that Maradona still wields even after death.
Astonishing to think that the Hand of God ball might end up in the back of someone's cupboard. Lucinda, thank you so much for joining us. That was our Latin America Affairs correspondent, Lucinda Elliott. You're listening to The Briefing. Finally today, our special World Cup global countdown, week three. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco is here. Hello, Faye.
Hello. It's been a difficult one to choose all those tracks, you know, Emma?
I bet it has. So we've done groups A and B, and I think the winners last week were, Netherlands and Iran. That's a couple of weeks ago. Then Argentina and Denmark made the cut last week. But we now have, we're moving on to groups E and F?
Absolutely.
Could you just recap how this whole shebang works, please?
Basically, it is indeed the World Cup of music, and I'm kind of mimicking the World Cup groups. Every group has four countries in it. But here in the Global Countdown, here's how is it going to work. I look at the number one song in the country. It needs to be from a local artist. If it's not a local artist, I go to number two, three, until I'll find one. And I will choose at the end of the show a winning song for each of the groups, and they'll be battling in the semi-final and final in the weeks to come here every Thursday on The Briefing, Emma.
Okay, so I think we can move on quite quickly. Let's not spare any time with this because it's a bit of a job, isn't it?
It is a job. It's longer than the usual global countdown. We start with Spain. They're very good at football.
Yeah, we're looking, so let's have a little bit of an overview. Group E is Spain,
Costa Rica,
Germany and Japan.
Yes.
Okay, so we have... What kind of musical hopes do we have? Because you just meant that Spain is usually quite good at football, Germany's quite good, Japan quite good, Costa Rica couldn't say. So we have a sort of particularly good and coherent, not necessarily group of death or group of zebras, which you will explain later. but we've got some pretty strong football performers. General overview, general feeling about Group E before we dive in?
The general feeling's that it's an exciting group because Germany and Japan, they are one of the biggest music markets in the world and they produce a lot of local content. I'm always curious what the Japanese and the Germans are listening. Spain, it's a good market, but they also they borrow a lot of things from Latin America. Costa Rica, we might have to chat a little later about
this. Okay, yes. I mean, I think you've been quite optimistic about the group. I think we can safely say that we have quite a challenge ahead of us in the next 10 minutes. And if you are listening closely, your ears might have a little bit of a challenge too. Just giving you a bit of a warning. It's the group of zebras thing, which you're going to explain later. So, okay, Spain.
Spain. We're going to start with Quevedo. He's only 20. But he's a super popular Spanish rapper. He does a little bit of reggaeton, trap, and again, he's only 20. I'm always shocked with this. This track is...
I'm not.
Well, this track is with Mora, who is from Puerto Rico. The song's called Apa, and apparently it's all about cheating in a way. Shall we have a listen?
Oh, please.
Plegaria, vida de artista y tú de universitaria, tú de PR, pero yo de Canarias. En mi cama tengo una vacante, bebé, dime si quieres ser mi becaria. Veré truco, pero tu dosis se me echó necesaria. Pa' llegar a mi apa no le hace falta ni jipia. Los jeans skinny, mami, en el cuello vivía. Ella se preparó.
That's just like I've walked into the start of a badly curated playlist for a spin class.
Well,
this is when you're clipping yourself into the bike, you're getting your water ready, you're not really listening to the music, and there's a good reason.
And he's having an affair with a married woman, and he's kind of proud.
And he's only 20?
He's only 20, my God.
Quevedo.
It's a busy job. Apparently there's even GPS involved, according to the lyrics.
Well, I don't know how one has an affair, but I would imagine that that technology would be involved in. All right,
exactly.
So this is a 20-year-old man having an affair with a married woman using satellites.
Perfect.
Marvellous.
Perfectly described.
What do we think of it, Faye?
Well, I think it's okay. It's a little bit generic, as you say, you know, perhaps something that you might listen in a spin class. You know, it's not a bad start, but it's not a great start either.
No, I think that's a very, very accurate description. But, ladies and gentlemen, it's not going to get much better. Am I giving the game away too much? Right. Costa Rica, shop and take a breath for this one.
Okay. And I have to explain the rules a bit further. It needs to be a local artist. The Costa Rican charts, there's not many Costa Rican artists, I have to say. So when this happens, Emma, I am in a conundrum here. I have to choose their kind of official track for the World Cup.
Oh, okay.
And this track, it's by Freddy Alves. It's not exactly a new song, but it always comes out when Costa Rica is doing well at football. I mean, we don't know yet if they will do that at the World Cup. The song is called Vamos Los Ticos. Ticos are the name given to the Costa Rican national football team.
So it's come on, you football players.
Absolutely.
Excellent. I think we can kind of anticipate what it's going to sound like, so brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. Okay.
Ticos.
That was clearly carrying you away and sweeping you away on a musical.
It's catchy.
It's catchy. It is catchy. You know how music inspires visual things going on in the brain. I am in a large room. It's maybe quite a lot. There might be a wooden roof. There's quite a lot of bare, sort of like muscly arms, and there's a lot of beer in plastic glasses flying out of the glasses.
I'm imagining this right now.
Yeah.
And I have something not bad to say about Costa Rica, but
never say anything bad about Costa Rica.
Oh, no, I love it. I love it. I really want to go. Great Freddy Alves track. But what's the music industry like? It's funny because Puerto Rico, it's also very small, the size of the population, but they are a music powerhouse. And there's so many artists from Puerto Rico in the Costa Rican chart. But, you know, they do have Freddy Alves. But that was just a minor criticism I would like to give to the Costa Rican music industry.
You're so gentle when you dish it out, Faye. I love that. You deliver the proverbial sandwich with such aplomb. Costa Rica, you have outshone yourselves in terms of football commitment. Music, little bit of work to do there. But let's not worry. It's good. It does the job. Thank you, Freddy Alves. Okay, we now go to Germany, where you say it's a musical, you know, it's a big market, and we have someone who I'd never come across before here, a gentleman called Peter Fox. So I looked at the video, and we're dealing with sort of very strange guy, don't we? We're dealing with a man who's in his 50s, mm-hmm. and yet who does dance hall.
Which I find it amazing.
Wonderful.
But that's what I like about Germany. It's always surprising musically. I think people have no idea what the Germans are listening because it's very much music for their own country in a way. But I generally like this track. And
yeah.
Peter Fox, yes, you said, he was a member of a German reggae band called Seed. So I think...
That's three E's, listeners.
That's three E's.
Three E's.
That's why I said Seed. Exactly. You know, and he's, you know, one of the biggest members of the German dancehall scene as well. But now
he doesn't look, dare I say it, because he's sort of this kind of slightly pale, weedy guy with a blue suit on.
It's like UB40 vibes.
Well, he looks like someone you'd meet at the school gates, frankly. But you know, here comes dancehall, here the man from Seed. And this track is called what? Zukunft in Pink. Now, Zukunft means future. Pink means, well, pink.
it's a bit political, this track.
It is.
Because the future is pink, or according to Peter Fox. And I love the lyrics. I mean, he said bad things about Elon Musk, which is great.
Yes.
So it's kind of, the song goes everywhere. Mm. It's a bit political, it's a bit dancey. He grabs some rhythms from South Africa as well. A lot of amapiano music there. Some people said it was cultural appropriation, but I mean, I think it's a fun track.
What
overall.
I find quite interesting about this, and this is for all our language fans out there, is that when you actually look at the lyrics, they're quite correct. So normally, if you have dancehall or reggae, you'll expect a certain amount of vernacular, a bit of jargon, a bit of, you know, the words that fit the music. This is incredibly neatly and grammatically correctly written. It's almost like you could sort of study it as some sort of exam translation game.
I'll start my German classes listening to this, Emma.
You'll do well.
Peter Fox with Zukunft. Pink.
Für alle und für mich selbst. Power to the people. Yeah, Frauen holen die Welt. Seh die Zukunft pink. Zukunft pink. Alles gut, mein Kind. Ja, alles gut, mein Kind.
Alle mal schwarz, ich seh die Zukunft pink. Wenn du mich fragst, wird alles gut, mein Kind. Mach dein Ding, aber such keinen Sinn. Und was nicht das, musst du erfinden. Oh ja, ich seh die Zukunft pink. Wenn du mich fragst, wird alles.
Okay, that's going on the Monocle 24
it's
thingy,
good.
Isn't it?
It's good.
It's good.
And I can feel the amapiano beats from South Africa as well. So it's quite interesting. I feel not many people, you know, knew about Peter Fox outside Germany, but now they do.
No,
because they're listening to Global Countdown.
Because they're listening to the Global Countdown, and you know, we are the pedagogical geniuses of international music. That's about as good as it's going to get today, ladies and gentlemen. I think we've got not to warn you too much of Group F, but before we leave Group E, we now go to Japan. So high hopes here, and indeed the Monocle playlist is always hungry. It's an ever hungry beast. Always needs a bit more boy band sparkle. Does it get it from Japan this time?
Absolutely. I think it's a great track. It's by a J-pop band called King and Prince. And although it's called King and Prince, there are actually 5 members for this band. But although I'm going to share some sad news after we listen to a clip of this track. Don't worry, it's not that sad, actually. I know you have concerned eyes there. Mm. Don't worry, it's not that bad.
We don't do sad on the Global Countdown.
It's not as bad as you're thinking.
Okay.
But let's have a listen to King and Prince with Tsukiyomi.
Okay, a couple of white portos and tonic, and we might be onto something here. But we need a bit of a helper with this one, don't we?
A little helper as well. Again, it's not a bad song, but as I said, 5 members. Mm. 5 become 2. Don't worry, they're not that. They're just leaving the band next year.
I was worried.
Don't worry. They're just saying the band, yeah, there'll be only 2 members. So they're not actually breaking up. I wonder if they will hire other 3 members. It's going to be a bit difficult. But perhaps the 2 remaining, they can be the king and prince.
You're so clever. What do we think of that music? It's okay. But normally you could go a little bit bananas for a decent bit of Japanese pop, couldn't you? And this one doesn't light my fire. The video is quite interesting. They all look rather hot in a room. It all looks as if they could pop on a bit of air conditioning or maybe open the window, because they all look a little bit warm. It's not so great.
But unfortunately, to listeners, I have to say, let's talk about zebras.
Yes.
And there's an expression in Brazil. I mean, zebras is always kind of the one that is weak, you know, that is kind of, I don't know if you have an expression like this in English, but Group F is not quite the best musically.
Have we got zebras in Group F?
We have quite a few zebras.
Just to recap, Group E we've just covered, but in a little while, once we have covered Group F, you will tell us who your choice is.
Yes, at the end.
Not zebras, maybe Group E, but nearly. I don't know what a nearly zebra is, but Group F. So, who are the countries in this one, Faye?
It is Belgium, Canada, Morocco, and Croatia.
Okay, so there's potential. Because the Belgians could be all right. You sometimes get some pretty decent stuff out of Belgium. Canada, pretty decent stuff out of Canada.
Massive pop stars there.
Morocco, exciting to know. And Croatia, I'm sure they're pretty good at what they do where they are.
So there we are. That's my massive generalisation about Group F. But I suspect that we're going somewhere quite not so great.
Yeah, it's Belgian. it's an interesting one because Oscar and the Wolf, he's a respected indie artist there with the song Warrior. You know, I even like some of his previous tracks, but this one, I'm not sure if I'm quite a fan. I realise it's the World Cup song for the Belgian football team as well. It talks about mental health. It talks about I'm a warrior. You know the band Imagine Dragons, Emma? I'm not such a big fan of this type of music. I don't know how can I describe it. It's kind of rock and roll for, you know, for people that don't know rock and roll that well. But
entry-level rock and roll.
Yeah, again, sorry if I'm being a bit too beachy here today. But shall we have a listen and let me know what you think. From Belgium, Oscar and the Wolf.
Okay. If I fall, I'm gonna rise. Like a phoenix, I'll fly. This year I'm a warrior. So what you say about me? Baby, I'm a champion. No matter what you say about me. This year I'm a warrior. So what you say about me?
Are we all puffing our chests out in that kind of I can take on the world kind of attitude?
And they are very good at football, I have to say.
Well, Oscar and the Wolf are good at football.
No, not Oscar and the Wolf, but his country, Belgium. He might do well, so this song might stay at number one for a bit longer, actually.
Just looking at Oscar and the Wolf, why haven't we all heard of them before? Because he's supported Lou Reed, he's supported Rasheen Murphy, he's sold stuff out left, right and centre. Oh, Oscar and the Wolf. You're lacking teeth.
Lacking a little bit of teeth. And as I said, I do like some of his previous songs. So maybe the problem is just with Warrior. This track, which I think is very kind of World Cup. You know, I'm a warrior. I'm going to win this. Mm. It's about overcoming your fears. Maybe a little bit cliche.
A little bit. Oh, dear. Not that we'd ever have a cliche here on the Global Countdown.
Of course not.
No, never, 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 never. Right. OK. Dare I say, the next song, I think, has a bit of a health warning to it, doesn't it? We're going to Canada, and goodness me when I listen to that.
Yes, it is Drake. And it's funny, Drake has a new album out. He was, I think his previous albums were quite chilled, I have to say. A lot of R&B, a little bit of electronica, but not the new album. I think he's quite sassy, his new album, you know. So there are a lot of, you know, swearing
here.
Is that
Honestly Nevermind?
Yes.
I'm just thinking that up. Looking that up, I should say.
He's Canada's biggest music export. I mean, we have to give him that as well. I mean, Drake, he sells a lot of, I think together with Taylor Swift and Adele, is one of the few musicians that still, you know, managed to have this power as well in terms of when it comes to sales and streaming. And this is one of the singles from his new album.
What's it called?
It's called Rich Flex by Drake.
21, can you do something for me?
21.
Can you hit a little rich flex for me?
21.
Then 21, can you do something for me?
21.
Drop some bars to my pussy ex for me. Then 21,
21.
Can you do something for me? Can you talk to the ops next for me?
Okay.
21.
Okay, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you just think, hang on, you're a multi-million selling record artist, and you just felt like it was a race to the bottom with this. It's angry, it's nasty. It gets even nastier. I mean, thanks to Callum, our studio manager, for finding only a few major swear words in that little bit. It gets even muckier in there, doesn't it?
You know,
I do sound like someone's mum.
You know why we're
just like, please.
You know why we're a bit downbeat here, Emma? Because I realised that from all the tracks so far, there hasn't been a single female singer, actually. And that's quite unusual. I mean, it is just an accident of fortune, because I think when you look at groups A, B, C, D, and E, A, B, C, and D, there was quite a healthy mix, but not this time. So it's very male-heavy.
Mm. This isn't a nice song at all. Canada, do better. Okay, let's move to Morocco.
Morocco is an interesting one. We're still...
Are you going to cheer us up with this one? Because I'm so miserable about it after Drake back.
I am not going to cheer you up.
Oh, sorry.
But the song is not bad. It's Moroccan hip-hop at its best, and it's quite political as well. I had to read a lot about this.
Who is this? What's the
tune? He's El Grande Toto, one of the biggest Moroccan rappers. The song's called Silhouette. The video for this is very depressing, Emma.
That's awful. No, honestly, if you're having a bad day, May I not suggest that you look at the videos of the songs that we're talking about just yet? Save it to a time moment when you've got a pina colada in one hand, you've got your Hawaiian shirt on and everything is sunny, and then nothing can touch your mood, because this is all abject misery, isn't it, Faye?
But perhaps good rap.
Perhaps good Moroccan hip-hop, which is frankly what the world needs more of. Shall we listen?
البيز اللي جايز عطوني كيلو واج وتبدا بابا خاين كئيب عطوني ستيلو واج في عيني ديك اللي بغيتها فوق تاسيلو واج البيز اللي فاليس وتمشي بيرو واج البيز اللي جايز عطوني كيلو واج.
Okay, I'm back on my spin bike.
It's good. It's good, I think. You know,
and
I was reading about the song. I mean, it talks about freedom of artistic expression. Apparently, there's some criticisms to the Moroccan government as well. It's not quite... He was involved in a controversy. Apparently, he was fined because he was promoting cannabis. And I think he was a bit angry with the Moroccan government. Mm. So there is... That's why I think he's touching on those topics. So, you know, I like the fact that it's a little bit political. It's not just an empty-headed kind of hip-hop track as well. So... Mm. Grand Toto kind of gained a little bit of my admiration.
He did. He's got. So there's meat on there's bone on the bones of the Grand Toto. Mm-hmm. He's probably worth spending a bit more time looking at it. Yeah, he was arrested after he told reporters, "I smoke weed. So what? It's normal." Well done. Not necessarily the best example to the kids, but frankly, he's fine.
He's
fine in the context of zebras.
Yes.
So he's the best. He's got the best stripe so far.
Agreed.
Okay. Finally, God, please, if you're still with us, still listening, I'm so grateful. let's go to Croatia.
Croatia. I mean, the thing about Croatia, it's fun to dance if you're a little bit drunk. You know, it's okay. But we can't be too angry about him because he just became a parent. I was reading some of the Croatian dailies, so it's true. I mean,
what's his name?
I think he's happy. His name is Girse. So
Girse.
G-R-S-E, for those who are curious about his music.
Mm.
And it's like party music, you know what?
It's potty music.
Potty.
Oh, party music. Potty. Well, you know, he's had a baby. You've got potty music.
Exactly.
Okay, let's have Girse's best then.
Shari, don't stop the party. Floor pali su sebe, daj mi. Lom radi, noć dan ne mari. Pleši u guži, kod da smo sami.
Goodness me, he's miserable.
Let's get ready to party, you know.
In the most downbeat, upset, not slept, changing nappies, really tired, bags under my eyes. Go shorty, here's the party. I mean, make an effort, Gersa, please. You know, if someone like that walks up to you on the dance floor and goes, well, he wouldn't say go shorty. He'd say, hey, shorty. And said, hey, shorty, here's your party.
Sorry, I'm laughing. Would
you say, yes, Gersa, I really want to be part of this? Or would you say, thank you, but my cab is waiting outside?
Thank you. I wonder if you're going to be qualified in my World Cup, Gersa.
Yes. Will you be in my group of zebras?
He just became a parent, right?
Yes.
Let's forgive him a little bit.
What did he have? A baby, I'm assuming.
A baby.
Congratulations to Gersa for his baby. Right, Faye. That brings us to the end of possibly the most downbeat, upbeat global countdown I've ever done. We are now going to recap. So we had from Group E, we had Spain, Costa Rica, Germany and Japan.
Okay. Excellent.
From Group F, Belgium. We had Belgium, Canada, Morocco and Grumpy Gersa from Croatia. So, okay, over to you, Faye, because obviously you have to decide where this now goes.
Group E was an easy choice. The winner is Germany.
Yes,
Peter Fox is here. Well done. 51 mm-hmm. years old and doing very well at the German dancehall scene.
Can we have a little listen to Peter Fox, 51 and doing quite well in the German dancehall scene?
Power to the people. Yeah, Frauen holen die Welt. Seh die Zukunft pink.
Yeah, I'm with that. Well done, Faye. Good choice in my book. Thank you for that. Sorry, Spain, Costa Rica and Japan, but Germany's qualifying to the final. Okay, next one. Group F.
That one, I had a few doubts in my head, but the winner is Morocco.
It has to be.
It has to
be. Surely.
It has to be.
Surely, because Oscar and a Wolf lacks bite. Drake, just sort yourself out, please. Gersa, cheer up.
But he's Morocco, a parent already. He doesn't need this.
He's a parent. He's got a baby. How can you smile? So, okay, it has to be Morocco.
Yes.
Okay, that's it. Wonderful. Thank you. So we now have six, don't we? We yes. have Germany and Croatia from today.
No, Morocco.
Germany and Morocco. My apologies, Morocco. Croatia, sorry for getting your hopes up. Group A was Netherlands and Iran, and Group A and B. And then we had Argentina and Denmark. Right. Okay. So just looking at that, now we're doing the kind of pundit stuff. What are your prospects for the next round? If we have Netherlands, Iran, Argentina, Denmark, Germany and Morocco.
I think the next round will be a very interesting one, and my country's in there. But don't worry, I'm very impartial. Don't you worry about this. But we have, it's going to be very strong. It's going to be Switzerland, Brazil, and much more. Even South Korea. I mean,
can't wait.
It's going to be a big week next week.
It will. Thank you, Faye. And that's all we have time for today's edition of The Briefing. Many thanks to all my guests and to the producers, Rhys James, the researcher, Emily Sands, and our studio manager, Callum McLean. The Briefing's back tomorrow at the same time. And don't forget to tune in to The Monocle Daily that airs at 1800 London time later on. But for now, from me, Emma Nelson, goodbye and thank you very much for listening.